Ernest, what's up? Look, I want to put you onto something that's been making waves in the personal finance world. If you've been relying on Mint to manage your finances, I got some news that might startle you at first. Mint is no more. But hold on, because every cloud has its silver lining, and in this case, that lining is Monarch Money. For those of us searching for a robust, user-friendly alternative, Monarch Money is stepping up to the plate. And from personal experience, it's hitting a home run. Let's get personal for a moment. Managing finances can be a maze of confusion, stress, and time consumption. Believe me, I've been there, jumping from one finance app to another, hoping to find that one platform that simplifies everything. Then came Monarch Money. Its ease of use, powerful features, and sleek design transformed my approach to managing finances. What truly sets Monarch apart for me, though, is its collaboration feature. With money being a top Discord trigger for many couples, the ability to seamlessly manage finances with my wife has been a game changer. No extra costs, just shared goals and clarity. But Monarch isn't just about managing your current finances, it's about building your future. Saving for that dream house, your wedding, or a once-in-a-lifetime vacation becomes not just a possibility, but a reality with Monarch's intuitive tools. It's no wonder the Wall Street Journal held it as the best app for savings growth. Monarch Money represents the next evolution in personal finance apps. It's an ad-free haven where your experience is the priority, constantly refined based on real user feedback. It's everything we've been asking for: intuitive, powerful, and relentlessly focused on user satisfaction. Now, for a bit more practicality, Monarch makes transitioning from Mint a breeze, ensuring you can bring all your tags and categories with you. Its intuitive design, customization options, and commitment to privacy and an ad-free experience make it stand out in the sea of competitors. Look, after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/leisure. That's MONARCHMONEY.com/leisure for your extended 30-day free trial. Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics, from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today.
All right, guys, welcome back. Earn Your Leisure Podcast.
Yeah, got it.
Special edition. But before we get started, we got some news. Philadelphia, we headed to your city. You know that we're on tour right now. So Philly, we're taking over the city March 14th, March 15th, two-day extravaganza. We got we got a live podcast on the 14th and a workshop on the 15th. Live podcast with my brother Wallow 267, big business.
Shout out to the boys.
Special surprise guest, open bar catered. And then on the workshop, we got Aisha Sheldon, Alex Good Energy.
They've been asking for him.
Vending Biz, Atia Blair.
Killing it.
Oh, man, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a crazy situation. So all the information is on our website, earnyourleisure.com, under the events tab. And get your tickets. Can't wait to see you. So, all right, we're going to jump right into it. You know, we try to take requests from our listeners as much as we possibly can. We try to facilitate it. So, you know, we get a lot of different requests for different people, and we try to make it happen. And one of the top requests that we've been getting, especially recently, is a legend in the music game and also in the tech game as well, Ryan Leslie. And so people hit us up. And they're like, yo, you should get him on the podcast. And actually, it's ironic because behind the scenes, I was working for like months to try to make it happen.
I remember, like, but, September, we got the, yo, he might come on. I'm like, what?
Like,
let's do it.
But
we here now.
But, you know, we did it. So, yes, Ryan Leslie needs no introduction, but I'll give him one. As I said, a legend in the game, producer, singer, rapper, worked with some of the biggest names in history, Kanye West, Diddy,
Beyonce,
Cassie,
produced, like,
Fabulous, Lloyd Banks. The list goes on.
Crazy.
But now he's doing his thing in tech. Obviously, he's a smart guy. If you know his backstory, he went to Harvard.
At 15.
Yeah. Like, he also got a perfect score on the SAT, I saw.
Yeah, we can't just breeze over these things.
So without further ado, Ryan Leslie, first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Yeah, appreciate
thanks
it.
Thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, so I hear y'all going to Philly. I didn't get the invite. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, all right, well, you invited right now.
You know what happens? Like, usually toward the end, they're like, yo, I'm coming to Philly. You just kind of gave it away.
Bet. Yeah. So we'll talk a little bit about the workshop.
So the workshop is, so, you know, like a lot of people do like financial seminars.
Yeah.
But our thing is different because we bring different people on. So it's really like kind of like a concert. That's how I really like to frame it. Because it's like each city that we built so many strong relationships with the podcast that each city that we go to, we have like people in the city and we try to switch it up. So like we might do trucking one city, we might do real estate, we might do wholesaling, we might do stocks.
You never know.
So presenters come on and they present for about 45 minutes. It's interactive, people ask them questions. And it's about 2.5 hours, 3 hours. Yeah. Afterwards, they stay, ask questions. So it's an intimate setting. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we really
try
like
to compare. Like when we talk about music, we try to compare like what Khaled does when he goes on tour.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time we go to a city, we bring somebody from that city.
Yeah.
So every time we go to a city, whether we in Houston, we're gonna bring somebody from Houston to come speak. And when we go to Atlanta, we bring the people from Atlanta. Now we in Philly, we bring the Philly people out. So
okay, so maybe I need to do the New York then.
New York's gonna be crazy. We're gonna talk all day about that. We're gonna talk about a few different things, but I would like to start with the music because that's where you originally started as far as you know, your career. So we talked about music a lot, but we never covered it from a producer standpoint. Yeah. I just realized that today when I was prepping for this.
Yeah, we had Derek talk about from the executive standpoint. Exactly. We had Mickey Fats talk about from
Mickey
the
Fax.
Artist. Shout out to
him. He did a dope freestyle.
But we never really had somebody break it down from the person who's actually making and curating that music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so as far as you getting in the game, how did your career path take as a producer first and even figuring out as far as like points on an album and negotiating royalties and things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, I think now more than ever, it's important to know your math on that. I think really when I was getting started, the goal, and I think actually in a lot of ways when people start getting into music, they just say, look, I just want to have the biggest hits possible, and you know, it's inevitable if I have a really big hit that I'm gonna get paid. Mm-hmm. You know, and there are a great number of revenue streams, and there are a great number of revenue streams that are potentially overlooked. And so, you know, for me coming up in the game, I was very fortunate to have really great mentors and folks that were working with me, had signed me, management, all of that. And so they really helped me to sit down and understand not only just my paperwork and my contracts, mm-hmm. but what all the actual revenue streams are. So with music, I mean, first of all, I would say, look, information is so readily available online. It's just about knowing what to search, mm-hmm. and then also knowing what's reliable. And so listen, you know, for me, even still today, there's your performance rights organizations, which is like your ASCAP, your BMI. Mm-hmm. And then you have your actual publishing. So whoever's actually administering your publishing. So I know there's a ton of folks that are putting music up on Spotify and, you know, distributing their music through an aggregator like a CD Baby, DistroKid, TuneCore, whatever it is. Yeah. And they completely overlook the actual other side of the publishing. And so you still need an administrator on that publishing side. And that's, and so, you know, I just had a great meeting with Downtown Music Holdings, and they've got probably one of the leading, from a technology standpoint, platforms for that publishing administration. It's called SongTrust. And so, you know, I think nowadays everything is basically self-service, and software mm-hmm. really has been that equalizer, I would say. And for me, I just like to be in control of my revenue stream. So I like to be able to look at, be able to just log into my accounts and see them all. Even if that means that, you know, they may be delayed, I just want to be 100% on top of them. So, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm even answering your question per se. When I first got started, I would just say, like, look, I was very much concerned with an advance. And I think a lot of folks, when they first get started, you've been living in the basement, you've been, you know, yeah. living out the trap, wherever you live in, you want that advance, because that advance is that first way that you're going to pay for all those years of starvation, if you will.
So the advance is the money that the record label's giving to you, saying, like, here's the money that you get to do the project.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's actually an advance against your royalties, okay. right? So on the artist side, depends on the type of deal you make. And I mean, listen, business is really just business, and whatever you sign is whatever you sign. I know there's definitely always been a lot of talk about, like, hey, you know, people are, you know, they got into slave deals, and you hear these kinds of overtones all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end of the day, I think, you know, as long as you've got good legal counsel and you're sitting down and you're looking at your contracts, you're definitely the final arbiter of what deal you get into. And so it's important for you just to know and be informed. So for me, my Bible level primer for the music industry, and this is an age old primer, is a Donald Passman book, All You Need to Know About the Music Business. It's updated all the time. And I always recommend, look, somebody that really wants to know, they can start there. And it's updated, and it was written by an attorney who definitely just understands just the nuances of the business. And then, you know, no matter what's actually written in the books, it's different when you're actually sitting across a negotiation table and you're going to negotiate whatever deal is best for you at that time. And so, you know, I find that there are a lot of folks that when they're sitting at that negotiation table and they've never seen $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 at one time in their bank account, much less $500,000 or $1 million. In those situations, they say, oh, yeah, definitely sign me up for that, without actually looking at what the contractual obligations are that are associated with signing those deals. At the end of the day, though, you know, life just goes on. And I was just having a conversation today. Life is really like water. It's fluid. And basically, the time that you have takes on the shape of whatever container that you that you put around your life. And so if you put a container around your life where you get that upfront advance, and it's a big upfront advance, and you're able to do in a smart way what you should do with that, and you're keeping track of your accounting and when that advance is recouped, et cetera, then that may be the right pathway for you, as opposed to delaying the gratification and waiting 18 months to actually let the publishing or the royalties trickle in.
So let me ask you this, because a lot of times, especially with producers, there's been a lot of record labels, won't name any record labels, but there's a lot of record labels where producers say that they don't get paid, right? It's like it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it such an epidemic with producers, specifically producers, making beats and getting delayed on their payments or not getting paid? Because you hear about that all the time, and even like big name producers, and they go on social media and they make a big deal about it.
It's always like, oh, I have a relationship with you and you'll get me on the back end, and it never happens.
That happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, listen, like I said, all of those situations are directly correlated to what you negotiate up front. And I would just say that in many cases, one of the most uncomfortable conversations to have. And unless you have an advocate or you have the wherewithal to have that conversation right there in the session, that uncomfortable conversation is, hey, what part of this record do I own? When do we get paid? How is it all going to be broken down? And where's the paperwork for it? It almost seems that antithetical to the creative process, right? Because the creative process, you want to be open. You want to be open to ideas. People want to be sharing back and forth. And the last element of that process is to be sitting back and saying, okay, what percentage of the song
is
this
line? It's like a prenup.
Yeah.
Like a prenup. Messes up the love.
Yeah. I just believe you get what you negotiate. And you may not even get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate, right? And
that's
so for me, I think that, we just have to get more comfortable with the discomfort. And that just needs to be a requisite of doing business. And once you're at that level and you understand, and folks that work with you understand that a requisite of doing business is to just have that upfront, transparent conversation, then once both sides agree, then you're allowed to run down on people for the money that's owed, because there is no confusion in terms of having some sort of fugazi conversation as opposed to having whatever you need to have in writing. And so you get what you negotiate.
Yeah, so I'm imagining, when you walk into these tables, obviously you come from a highly educated background. I think you said your dad wanted you to study law. Is that true?
Law, medicine, whatever was a guaranteed pathway that somebody was going to get, highest.
Did you feel when you sit at these tables, obviously you have a distinct advantage, knowing that, they're not talking to somebody who's uneducated in this game?
Listen, I would say that Baby and Slim sitting at these tables, they also had an advantage because they were moving 100,000 mixtapes a week. Mm-hmm. So the education is... The education comes in whatever format that you achieve or accumulate the education, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really up to you to educate yourself. I didn't go to Harvard for music business. I read it myself. And so I think probably some of the most astute business people in the music business, they learn from being observant. They learn from having great relationships. They learn from deciding that they wanted to be mentored by the best attorneys, the best managers, and they had the transparency into the deals. And so I think that, nowadays, like I said, with the amount of information that's readily accessible, there's really no excuse for someone to enter into a deal blindly unless they intentionally just want to be ignorant about the deal. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, we live in an age of media where you could find anybody, you could connect with anyone. They may or may not respond, but you can at least reach out. You can ask for an introduction. You can ask for a referral. You can ask for a recommendation, and you can go get the knowledge. And so you want to be great, just be around the greatest and absorb as much knowledge as possible. And before you sit down at the table, make sure that you've done your homework and your research so that even in the absence of knowing what you need to discuss, you can ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. So that people understand that you're no slouch when you come to the negotiation table.
So what is the you said the royalty administrator company?
Songtrust.
Can you explain that? I never heard that before.
Yeah, so basically, you're getting whatever the streaming services are paying you. And at the same time, you're also entitled to a royalty as a publisher of the music and a writer of the music. And so those publishing and writing royalties have to be collected and administrated for me, the beauty of Songtrust is that those royalties are actually collected and administrated on your behalf in all of the countries and territories around the world. So mm-hmm. that includes what happens, you get paid for your Spotify streams. What happens when your record makes it onto the radio in some obscure country? Or what happens when your record is actually being used in a video game? What happens when your record is actually being played in the nightclubs in, some overseas country? All of that is actually being tracked, and there are a massive number of artists who completely overlook that as a revenue stream. And so I think one of the greatest takeaways from my meeting recently, like I said, with Downtown Music Holdings, was that, you know, there are a number of creators who, once they put their music through DistroKid or TuneCore, they get those checks and they think that's it, mm-hmm. when really there's an entire other world of publishing royalties that can be connected. You just need to hire an agency to do it. You give them a commission for doing it, and that becomes an additional income stream for you.
So when you're talking about, I kind of think like when streaming, I can get how they track the data. When it's played on the radio, I understand how they can track the data. How does that happen in a nightclub? Like, I'm not sure.
You just turn, like, really for me, every time I perform overseas, they are keeping track of the set list. So I even get paid to perform my own music.
So like a DJ has to give the set list to the venue?
They give the set list.
Got you.
And in Europe, I think it's called GEMA, G-E-M-A.
Okay.
And yeah, they track it the best that they can, you know? So bottom line is, it's just an additional revenue stream. And I think with the advancements in technology, that may, or inevitably, that will improve. It's just going to get better. Right?
So, like, you can literally get booked for a nightclub, get paid to go to the nightclub.
Yeah.
And then if the DJ starts, yo, Ryan Leslie's in the house, and starts playing your records, you can pay from that too.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, obviously, it's pennies on a dollar.
Every cent
counts. Once you do that, at scale, it starts to begin to become material and significant.
So, as far as the new age that we're in with, because we're going to talk about that in the next segment with the direct-to-consumer and all of that, but for new magicians, artists, producers specifically, where they're not going to the traditional route of going to a record label, because now I've seen it from both sides, where a lot of producers are mad at producers that's like selling beats for $100, like, but they're getting their music out, yeah. And then, you know, it's an easier route. So what's your take on that for producers specifically that might be, I guess, maybe devaluing their work?
We saw that happen with Old Town Road. Right, like the dude sold the beat and he gave it to him for like $2,000.
Or even what's the kid, Bobby Shmurda.
Right.
That was Lloyd Banks' beat, right? Originally.
Who was that?
Jaleel Beats.
Jaleel Beats, right?
Yeah.
Same thing. But that
it was
that
like
record,
$1,000, something like that.
Biggest record of the year, right?
Yeah.
Goes 10-12 million times platinum.
Trust me, those producers, as long as they retain their copyright ownership of those beats, and I also know Abe over at BeatStars. Those beats are actually being licensed, and at least to my knowledge, they're being licensed. And yeah, you give the license for some low barrier to entry cost so that, you know, some artist that doesn't have a lot of money but is very creative and could create the next Panda, the next Old Town Road, the next, you know, Bobby Shmurda smash. You license those beats. You retain the ownership, though, of the copyright, and that's where that song trust relationship comes into play, because you're definitely going to get paid based on your ownership of that intellectual property. I mean, and so that's why, like I said, you just got to be astute about it. And for anyone that has, you know, that has time to be hating on how someone else is getting to their bag, I always recommend, like, look, that means you got too much time on your hand. You should really just find another stream of income that you could go chase, because everyone needs to make money the way they feel is best for them. And the impact overall that creates in the industry is just creating more and more opportunity for folks that want to make a living doing what they love. They have the right and they have the latitude to price that intellectual property however they want from a licensing perspective. And you know, when I was an undergrad at Harvard, I had a business school professor, and I used to say, oh man, you know, I want to hold on to all my music. He said, look, Ryan, just hold on to your copyrights, because the best thing that can ever happen to you is one of those songs just go. Whether someone paid you up front for it or not, as long as you own the copyright, you're getting paid, and you're going to get paid handsomely as long as you've done what you're supposed to do in terms of owning that copyright.
Oh, well, that was a lot with the music. So now in the next segment, we're going to go into what you got going on now with phone, and we're going to talk about some other stuff. All right, so now we're going to go into the deep dive on the tech side. And this is something that we talked about a few different times. So Derek Ferguson, former Bad Boy COO, right?
Yep.
CFO. Shout out to Derek, good guest. And he was the first one to actually bring this up.
Yeah.
And then our guy Jabari from R&B Only talked about the data.
Yep.
Then we had Dana Chanel and Prince Darnell, and they both spoke about the same thing.
Yep.
So it's been a kind of recurring theme on Earn Your Leisure. But you have an actual platform in place. And so 2013, I was watching the Breakfast Club interview. So 2013, you said you took your music off of streaming services, right?
Right.
Why'd you do that?
Well, I needed to create an incentive for people to really want to connect with me directly. So, I mean, now you can go listen to my records on streaming services. At that time, though, I felt that the most important, I would say, most important factor or most important attractor or incentive for someone to connect with me directly would be through a conversation about music and new music. And so in order to build the audience that I wanted to build, and in order to attract the audience that I wanted to attract, and in order to accumulate the kind of data I wanted to accumulate, I needed to make sure that that audience was communicating with me directly, because the convenience of iTunes, the convenience of Amazon, the convenience of Spotify made it such that they really were just like, oh, okay, well, you know, I can just go listen to Ryan's music. Why I gotta give him my cell phone number to listen to it? And so to take all the music off the streaming services, it gave me a way to differentiate between those that were passive interactions with me and active interactions with me. And I knew that I can convert the active interactions into a relationship of support. And that support, you know, came to the tune of, you know, a $2 million independent album cycle at that time, with no label, no management, no music videos, just a short documentary around the project. And so it was important to make sure that there was one exclusive hub where they could get the product, and that the gateway to that hub was for them to just simply introduce themselves, so that for the first time, instead of having an anonymous following, I could actually have a following where every single interaction had a name, an email, a phone number, a city, a birthday associated with that.
Yeah, because a lot of times you hear people say we have hardcore fans, right? But they just go to shows and, like, maybe there's 15,000 people in a city. You leave that city, you have no idea. You don't know any of them unless they pay for a package and they met you backstage or something like that.
Right.
That doesn't happen. Even if you sold records, like, there was no way to track, like, hey, Tanisha from Pennsylvania, like, she bought my album when I you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, your mindset going in was like, let me find the core base and then make an advantage of that off of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the foundation of any great business. That's the foundation of any great audience, is who is your core? Your core, not only are they going to be your greatest supporters, they will also be your greatest evangelists. And so when you have a relationship with both your greatest supporters and greatest evangelists, then that therefore creates the kind of foundation for growth and scale that I think every single business, whether you're a personal business, whether you're in financial services, whether you're selling insurance, whether you're doing business development for a startup, when you have that core and that core is pleased with your product or service, and that core is also evangelizing for you, they're going to bring you referrals, and then you scale that exact flywheel. And anyone that studied Amazon understands sort of that flywheel concept. That flywheel starts to work, and that's where you get the kind of Amazon scale. And I believe that that should be applicable to anyone that's starting a business. And I would say the ability to manage that is even more possible when the scale is small. So when you're first starting, you should really just be enjoying the opportunity and the luxury, if you will, of having that kind of relationship with just your first 20 customers, your first 200 customers, your first 5,000 customers. At the scale of Jeff Bezos, let's be real, he actually knows what all of us are doing on Amazon. And at the same time, he only knows that when he's able to log in and actually pull up that record. Same Same for, let's call it Delta Airlines. Same for,
Facebook.
You know, yeah, they can definitely see your activity. Mm-hmm. The reason why I like the Delta Airlines example is because Delta's data about you is really, I would say, it's very specific to their business relationship with you, right? Amazon and Facebook, I would say, you know, the reason why they've ended up in Congress and ended up with a lot of questions is because, you know, are they collecting more data than they need to have that business relationship with you? The reason why I love Delta is that Delta just knows, okay, my relationship, my business relationship with Ryan Leslie is based on him flying, whether it's flying on, you know, chartered aircraft, Delta private jets, Sky Access, or, you know, Diamond Medallion member or Million Miler, whatever it is. And they keep their data really focused on the business relationship with me and how to serve me better. Now, in defense of Jeff Bezos or Mark Zuckerberg, they also believe that they need to collect more data to better serve their audiences. So they need to know, hey, Ryan doesn't like this, so I'm not going to serve him ads that look like this. Same with Google. Mm-hmm. Or Ryan doesn't like this, so I'm not going to recommend this to him on Amazon. The tricky part is when, you know, is your Echo device listening to you? Is your, you know, Apple device listening to you?
1,000%. Right? There's got to be a mic in the phone. I'm telling you, like, there'll be conversations, and it won't even be me talking about it. I could be in the room with somebody, and let's say they're talking about getting a new oven. Like, I'm telling you, like, I go to my phone, and the first ad will be like a Best Buy.
Nah, but the crazy thing is, like, the not to go off topic, but really not off topic. The crazy thing that happened to me when I really started to get scared about technology is that I was on a phone. I think I might have been on the phone with you, Troy. And I was talking about something, like, let's say, like, vacation in Jamaica, something like that, right? But on my phone. So after the conversation, I'm verbally talking about this. I go on my laptop, which is a complete, it's not an Apple device at all. It's like a Toshiba. Mm-hmm. And I go on Google, and it's like a vacation for Jamaica thing mm-hmm. that pops up. So I'm like, how did that transfer from my iPhone to mm-hmm. a Toshiba laptop in 5 minutes?
Like, same router.
It's crazy. Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, the fact that the largest technology companies are doing this at scale. And when we talk about a scale, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, managing hundreds of millions of people, that for me is just an indicator that A, the technology exists for relationship management at scale. So the technology already exists. And B, for someone that has any level of ingenuity, that technology can be leveraged on a personal and business level, no matter the scale of your business. So what that means is, as long as Google, as long as WhatsApp, as long as Instagram, as long as Dropbox can have 600-700 million, maybe a billion users, and it's all managed, and when you log into your Gmail account, it's not mixed in with somebody else's email, it's all very well organized. When you log into your Google Drive, it's all well organized. The fact that the technology infrastructure exists, the fact that the technology infrastructure is now being productized, so a lot of your favorite businesses are running on Amazon Web Services.
Mm-hmm, AWS.
So whatever Amazon is using to run their back end, you can also just subscribe to that service and run your back end that way. So my excitement for this, especially for our community, is as long as you have the ingenuity, like I said, and you have the vision and you have the blueprint, because the blueprint's already been laid, here's how you actually can manage 600 million people, then they're really, once again, the only limitation is really you. The only limitation is how great of a team can you put together. The only limitation is how big is your vision. The only limitation is how great are the relationships you could put around you to believe in your vision. And so, you know, we watched Steve Stout go out to Silicon Valley and raise $70 million to make the record company of the future. We've watched, you know, two kids from Brazil who built the PayPal of Brazil come and build a credit card company called Brex, turn it into a $1.1 billion business in 2 years, right?
Teenagers too.
And so, teenagers, right? Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying is, for us as a community, it's important to A, understand that the knowledge exists. and the information is just readily available and it's abundant. Number two, though, is the limitation that you place on yourself is going to be directly correlated to the kind of impact and change that you actually can make in the world. And so I believe that it's time for us. You know, people always say, hey, you should dream big. I'm saying dream bigger. I'm saying that as long as Amazon can be what it has become, then whoever is coming next, because of the speed of technology, they're going to be able to build the Amazon or the Facebook or the Google or the Instagram of the future in half the time or a quarter of the time. They just need to, A, have a vision that's big enough, and B, be very intentional around the relationships that they build around the actual vision. And those people have to buy into that vision. And that could be, you know, your vision for yourself as a music artist, yeah, your vision for yourself as an entrepreneur, your vision for yourself as a software developer, as a medical doctor, as an astronaut, whatever your vision is, you've got to put great people around you, the best people around you, because the best people actually attract one another, mm-hmm, because they're all united in this concept that they want to impact the world in the same way that you do, which is on the greatest scale.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that you kind of preach, and I love it. It's like, there's a bunch of people over here that have the ideas. They just need to find the people with the capital to help them get out those ideas. And relationships is something that you're big on, right? And that's what, I mean, pretty much Superphone is based off of that.
Right.
And I know you have this pyramid of intimacy. Relationships.
Yeah.
I'm interested because in the pyramid, you start with, obviously, at the bottom of the list, social media.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, I would say that social media is almost like a virtual representation of walking around the streets of New York, right? So anyone that you see on the streets of New York or riding the trains or however you're walking around New York, you actually do have the option of speaking to them, right?
Okay.
So you could be in Times Square and, you know, it's 10, 20,000 people in Times Square. As long as they're standing there and walking the same street with you, you have the option of speaking with them. Mm-hmm. Whether they're going to speak to you is up to them.
New York.
You have the option.
Right.
Same on the internet, right? Social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever social platform you're on. As long as they're there and they're sharing, you also have the option of reaching out and speaking to them, whether it's through a direct message, whether it's in a comment, whether it's in a retweet or reply, whatever it is. They obviously have the option of whether they would like to respond. The connectivity is there. So I would say the expected response, and that's why you just say, oh, in New York, because there's already
right. There's built, a stigma there.
It's already built in the expected response time. So once you start on social media and you're basically, and that's basically a virtual representation of what's happening in the world, if you're just walking around, the expected response time or the expectation for a response is very low,
mm-hmm,
right? Once you can move up, and you actually can get an email address,
yeah,
that expectation for a response goes up
a little bit higher.
Yeah.
So you went social media, I think you said DMs, yeah, and then, yeah, now we're at email.
Right. So you get from DMs to email. The beauty of email as well is the fact that 9 times out of 10, when you get someone's email, you've been introduced by someone. So you say, like, just how I said, hey, put me in touch with your guy from the R&B, and he's doing texting. I'm going to get a warm introduction. So it's not just me reaching out.
Randomly.
Yeah. I'm getting a warm introduction on email, right? That can also happen on text. What I like about text, though, is the fact that text allows you to turn up from texting to a phone conversation, mm-hmm, very quickly. And when you have that kind of rapport, you're really going to see who wants to work with you,
yeah,
when you can take stock of who actually answers your phone call, especially in 2020. Who's actually going to answer the phone call, right? And then that continues up the pyramid. Okay, yo, we had a phone call. Hey, look, why don't you pull up at this time? You got that in person, and then you continue moving up the pyramid from there.
So
yeah,
I want to talk about Superphone, but before that, I wanted to go back to the, you said you made $2 million after off that album when you took it off. So can you detail, like, how did you do that? Was it through your merch? Was it through live shows, a combination of everything?
Yeah. Live made up the majority.
Live shows?
Yeah. So when I put my number on Twitter and say, hey, everybody shoot me a text, there were 35,000 people that texted in. the first response that everyone got, and whether you're texting, you know, you texting me for the first time, or you see any of these other celebs. I mean, they're now 6-7 years later, everybody finally caught on. You know what I'm saying?
Visionary.
But the first response is, it needs to be automated, right? And so for you to be able to manage the scale, and that first response is always, "Thanks for texting. I would love to know who you are. So please, you know, put your information in my phone, right? Because I'm not going to type everybody's information
in. Yeah.
So here's a form you can actually put your information in my phone so I know who's even texting me." At that point, the difference, I would say, between my 2013 campaign and the campaigns that I'm seeing now is that there was a very specific intent captured at the initiation of the conversation. So I didn't just say, "Hey, here's my number, shoot me a text, what's up?" I said, "Look, shoot me a text to get my new album." So they shot me a text. I already know the reason they're texting is to get my new album.
They want the product.
"What's your information?" Once I have the information, "Here's a link to get the album." Once that intent is captured, then you have an incredibly high conversion rate. So one out of every two, about 17,000 people actually bought that record. They bought it for $10. That's 170,000, right? The difference, though, is that I now have a Rolodex, a record, a ledger of every single person that's willing to actually spend money with me directly. So now, not only do I have names, not only do I have emails, not only do I have telephone numbers, I have city and state and country information. So now I'm going on tour.
Got the real gold.
You're going on tour. People go to concerts because it is a social experience. So, yeah, you might go to the concert if none of your friends want to go. You still figure out a way you go by yourself, but you're still in a room with a bunch of people. You guys are connected by the fact that you appreciate the artist that's on stage. For me, in that situation, even though only 17,000 people in my phone actually bought my record, they all brought a friend or two or three or five to the concerts when I announced them. We sold 40,000 tickets at €60 a ticket. You could do the math.
That's
there.
Like five albums right there.
Right? Voila. You know? And so it's really just, and like I said, you know, there's obviously ancillary income that happens from that. There's publishing
merch,
revenue
stuff,
and
yeah,
merchandise, et cetera. For me, you know, I really prefer digital goods because, you know, there's a cost of goods, you know, when you have merchandise, and there's a cost of inventory, there's a cost of shipping. And so digital goods, for me, have always been my preference just because they have unlimited scale. And as long as you're delivering value, hopefully your content is going to be evergreen. And so that's why I always remind an artist that even though you may feel like your music is outdated to you, it's actually brand new for the person who's hearing it for the first time. And the reality is that even if you went platinum, there is still a large number of people around the world who have yet to have even heard your record one time. So you have the ability in music, which is always why I say, look, just create the best music you possibly can, because great music is evergreen, you know? And so, you know, I'm doing some real estate development and investments in Brooklyn. And so, you know, sometimes you'll walk into some of the, whether it's the mom and pop stores or just the bodegas or wherever, and they'll be playing some great, you know, old school music. I'd never heard the record before. I'm putting my Shazam up, because for me, it's still that experience of discovering that music for the first time. It's 30, 40 years old, you know?
I love what you said as far as like how many people don't know you, because that happened. I realized that, like, now with the podcast, it's become very popular, especially in our community. And we went to an event, Curl Fest. I don't know if you heard of it, but one of our guests on the podcast, a friend of ours, she does it. So we at Curl Fest this year, and it's like 20,000 women and not a lot of men. And like at least probably like 20 people came up to us like, "Yo, we love your podcast." So at first I'm like, this is dope. Like, we feel like, you know, we made it.
Right.
But then I'm thinking, all right, 20 people recognized us,
right,
which is dope. But there's 20,000 people here.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
How many people? We still got so much more
I tell
to penetrate.
Every day. I tell them every day. Like, my life is so much duality. Like, I go to work. Most of my coworkers don't even know I do a podcast. Right. I walk down the street, most people don't even know I'm a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But like, there are rare cases, like we're in Houston, Ian, somebody will say, oh, y'all love your podcast. It's right. Like, all right, this is cool, but yeah. Like, no, we got so
it
much
just shows
further
you
to go.
The yeah. penetration. You can yeah. never get caught yeah. thinking that you like made it, because yeah. there's always a bunch of people that don't yeah. know who
have
you
no
are.
Have no clue
yeah.
who you are.
Yeah, and also, just to keep it 100, you still can be ridiculously wealthy just from a niche audience, you know? I would say that, you know, there exists a number of Gen Zers that may not even know who Oprah is, yeah. right?
Mm-hmm. That's a fact.
The audience, though, that she's created, that's her niche audience, and that's a loyal audience, and that audience is not just limited to the viewers, it's also limited to the television executives that love her content and want to syndicate it, right? And so I think that, you know, I would say the conundrum of scale, or the dilemma, if you will, of scale, is unless you really have the technological infrastructure to have a direct relationship with each one of your listeners at scale, you're better off having a manageable audience in terms of size, so that you can actually have a depth of a relationship with those folks. I have folks, you know, you look at my socials compared to the biggest stars or influencers on Instagram, I'm sitting at 360,000 followers. I know that in my core, though, I have folks that have spent $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 with me, and I know every dollar they spent, I know the products they like, et cetera. And so, you know, that depth of relationship on it, and that's sort of in any vertical, in any circumstance, the depth of relationship is always going to yield, I would say, just a greater reward in general.
Yeah, sometimes less is more.
Less is more. A lot of times less is more.
And this is a prime example of it.
Yeah.
So I know you get emails and you get texts, but you're so adamant about the text.
Yeah.
And the percentages show, like, I think you go down and you said, like, 22% of people, you know, actually, when they get an email, open it and go to it, whereas when people get a text message, even if you sent it and they didn't read it, you know they got it.
Yeah.
How are we tracking that data?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I track based on whatever the call to action is in the text that I send. So for me, you know, once again, I capture intent on the way in. So let's just take, for example, a case in point. I did a 10th anniversary concert for my debut and sophomore albums.
In December.
Right?
Yep.
And so the easiest way for me to track intent was, hey, are you interested in coming to my concert? Just RSVP here. There's no barrier of payment. How many tickets would you like? This is how much the tickets cost. How many VIP tickets would you like? This is how much they cost. What songs do you want me to play? That creates a beautiful capture of intent right at the beginning of the conversation. And so I know these are the songs that you like. I know how many VIP tickets. I know how many general admission tickets you want. And then when I deliver on that request, I know that there's going to be a very high engagement. And so I'm tracking based on link clicks. So I will literally, once somebody, first and foremost, somebody comes through that form, I don't need to send them a link to fill out a form, because they already just RSVP through a form. So now I know that all I need to do is deliver on the request. And the request is, I want to come to your concert. So send them a link. I can track whether or not they click that link. And then once they're actually in my e-commerce ecosystem, I can track whether or not they actually purchase. And whether they purchase or not, I have a direct line of communication, so I can ask them, what is the reason? Well, I'm gonna be out of town. Or, hey, it's Christmas time, so I've decided, like, I would definitely love to come to the concert, but I need to get XYZ gifts, et cetera. Mm. That kind of context around even the non-purchases is priceless information, and it's now all stored in my phone in that text conversation. I would say the nuance between email and text conversations is a very obvious and simple one. Every time you get an email from someone, it's a new thread. When you get a text from someone, as long as it's from the same number, that thread is the same and it's consistent and it's continuous until they either change their number, block you, or pass away.
Unsubscribe. Something like that.
Nah, yeah. I feel like emails, especially me, like, I get so many emails, And it's like, I might check my emails like 5 times a day,
mm-hmm.
but I'm on my phone all day. So yeah. if somebody texts me, odds are I'm gonna see it.
Yeah.
Whereas an email, you might get an email and then you might get, you know, wrapped up in some stuff and you might right. not even get track, you lose track and never even catch
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It happens with text too. I know, yeah, you know, folks got a lot of people there.
It does.
Got a bunch of unread
but
text.
It's easier to track text than it is email. So
right now. Yeah. And so that's really where Superphone steps in. At some point in time, all of the traffic that you're having on email will eventually start to permeate and make its way into your text message feed. The challenge with today's text message feed is that we have iPhone 11 and we're still using iMessage 1. There's no folders, there's no automation, there's no mark a message as unread, there's no, yo, remind me to respond to this message later after work. All of that is missing. And yet we have emojis, we got virtual reality, we got augmented reality, people running around in Central Park looking for Pokemon. And the bottom line is, where is the innovation in that feed, which is potentially our most important form of human communication? And so that's really where I'm sitting at the helm of Superphone and saying, look, at first we're going to enable businesses. We're going to enable, you know, whether you are an Earn Your Leisure podcast and you have 200,000 people, or you're a masseuse or a yoga instructor, or you sell cupcakes, or you're a florist and you just have, you know, 20 or 15 clients. How do we make you more efficient in this ecosystem of text, at least on your side? The folks that you're interacting with, they don't need to download an app. They just need to know that you never miss a birthday, you never miss an anniversary, and they never miss out when you have a sale, a promotion, an event. That's the first relationship that we're going to build and we're going to power. Then what's going to happen is all of a sudden, all of these consumers are going to give their numbers to all of these businesses because it's more convenient. And then at that point, there will need to be inbox management for your text feed in the same way that inbox management is a necessity for email. And so for me, I'm just sitting here. And like I said, look, you know, what I was doing in 2013, it took 7 years for folks, 6-7 years for folks to catch up. Now I'm sitting, you know, and looking towards the future and saying, okay, these are the problems of the future that I know are inevitable. They are impending challenges that are going to need to be solved. And how am I building a product and productizing the solutions that I envision so that they are turnkey and they're accessible and they're affordable? Because by the time your inbox gets flooded, you won't even have recognized that you've given your number to all these people. And I know this is going to happen because this is what happened with email.
No, and it's actually, I'm glad you said that, because if anybody's listening, don't take it personal. I've been getting a lot of text messages and emails lately. I always pride myself on being like very organized.
Right.
But now, especially with the podcast, my business, my personal life, it's becoming overwhelming.
Right.
And a lot of times you get a text and it's like you mean to text somebody back, and then before you know it, it's 5 days later and it's like, oh damn. But then people take it personal.
Right.
Yeah. Like, yo, I text you, right. I know you saw it.
And then when right. they see you, it's like, yo, I text
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Right. So Superphone is it an app?
It's an app, and
is it automated?
You can automate as much or as little as you want.
So you make the messages, right? So like
yeah.
Ryan Leslie, on my birthday, you're gonna text me. You can choose to say, you know what, yo, Troy, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Yo, glad to see you last week at the concert.
Yeah, and I can send it as a voice note, too. So, you know, for somebody that writes in and says, yo, Ryan, it's my birthday, I could just literally press a button and it'll send, like, yo, happy birthday from your boy Ryan. And it will also log that that's a birthday. So if I want to do that every year, forever, I can do that every year. Now, people have always, you know, made fun of me because they say, okay, once you set that up, what happens when you pass away? You're still going to be texting people happy birthday after you, you know what I'm saying, in heaven, beyond
Troy,
the grave, you know?
This is Jesus and
right,
Ryan.
Exactly, yeah. Have a great one, brother. I'll see you up here soon.
Can't
right?
wait to see you when
right,
you get here.
Right.
So Superphone is a management. It's a management system.
Yes, it's inbox management for inbox text. Management. And it's enterprise right now. Some of your favorite favorite New York companies are using it. Some of your favorite fashion companies are using it. Obviously, I'm sure you've seen, you know, a ton of celebrities giving their phone numbers out, et cetera, following that pathway. But for us, we're really focused on, like I said, that next wave. And that next wave is every element and feature and aspect of Gmail that allows you to organize email at the scale that you have it. And even if it's just a personal use of email, your scale is crazy just by nature of the services you've signed up for, interest that you might have in somebody's music, interest in a podcast, interest in a product, interest in a crowdfunding, interest in whatever it is. Your email is crazy right now. My prediction is that your text message feed is eventually going to get there. And the folks who, once again, are adopting technology to help them to be more efficient and manage this at scale and adopting that technology early, those are the folks who have that arbitrage opportunity to really profit. And when I say profit, that means both in time, relationships, and money, because you have a better handle on the most important form of human communication, which right now is that text feed.
Yo, in 2013, obviously you changed the game, right? And I'm thinking now, right, 2020, now that everybody's catching on to what you were trying to tell them, like they probably thought, yo, he's tripping. What is he doing? What is that feeling like? Are you just like so focused on the future that it's like, you know what? I'm glad you caught up, but I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can already just hear it in my tone. I think that is great for people to catch up. I think that is great for innovation to finally start reaching that sort of mass adoption, because it's important. It's required for us to be able to fix the sort of large scale issues that we're having. I mean, we're talking about climate change. We're talking about, you know, breakouts of viruses. We're talking about trade wars. And so the bottom line is that for us to be able to even live in peace with one another, we need to be able to adopt this kind of innovation. And it's important for visionaries and futurists and technologists to anticipate the problems that we're going to have, the challenges that we're going to have, and create turnkey solutions for them. I mean, as it stands right now, I can go all over the world and I never have an issue getting a car from point A to point B. It took a group of folks who were having that issue to say, hey, we're going to solve that with ride sharing, right? And so for me, I am, like I said, I'm just anticipating. I'm like, look, I'm glad you guys caught up. We're going to have a major epidemic here where people just going, their phones, are just, you're going to get promoter text messages. I mean, you probably are getting promoter text messages already, right? You're going to get promoter text messages. You're going to have your doctor, your dentist texting you. You're going to have your grocery store texting you. You have Amazon deliveries. They're already texting you. You're going to have your bank texting you. You have your family texting you. If you got a business, you have your customers texting you. iMessage One, that's really how you plan on efficiently managing that at scale. I'm already knowing from the seat that I'm in right now on this podcast that the future is going to be a smart inbox management system. And as long as I have that vision, I can, with my team, build that solution way before the problem or the challenge gets out of hand. And that's why I'm saying those that adopt the solution now are going to have the advantage of, I would say, leveraging and profiting from their ingenuity, because you're just going to be that many more steps ahead of anyone else that's trying to manage it manually.
There you have it. So that was a lot of gems right there. So we're going to head into the last segment. We're going to take it home. We're going to talk about wealth plan and some other stuff as well.
Bet.
All right. So we're going to talk about a lot of cool things. But before we start, I wanted to we was huge fans, rest in peace, of Nip before he passed away, went to his concert in New York, got his album and all that. But I see that you actually helped him out as far as business. A lot of people look at him as, like, you know, his business intellect. And so his mixtape, everybody knows about the Crenshaw mixtape. He dropped for $100, Proud to Pay campaign. But then he had another mixtape where he dropped for $1,000, and that was on your platform, correct?
Right.
You talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, really it was just his like I said, just the ingenuity of recognizing a replicable pathway to success. And so for me, I was, like I said, I was doing the direct-to-consumer. Nip, in my opinion, has always just been one of those minds that was a sponge for knowledge. And so, you know, it was actually my guy, Nathan McCartney, that put us together. And, you know, shout out Steve Carlos. I mean, shout out the whole All Money In team, George Panisse, DJ VIP, all those guys, man. We had a great time, man. You know, I took him out to showed him around Paris, and, you know, just showed him just the power of what technology could do for the audience that he was already building at that time and the relationship that he was already building. So, I mean, it was just kind of a no-brainer once we sat down and broke bread. And, you know, I remember my guy Slow, he actually put together a brunch, me, Nipsey, Wilson Chandler, just to talk about, you know, other ventures that we wanted to get into, startup investing, venture investing, technology, film and television, health, you know, the documentary that he was going to do.
You guys introduced him to Bitcoin too, right?
Yeah, so definitely, you know, that was a conversation. He said, yo, Ryan, what's the next topic? I said, yo, crypto. He said, okay, I'm on it, you know?
We have a crazy story about crypto. We'll talk about that another time.
Why we got to talk about it another time? What's the story?
We lost some money.
Why? What happened? Come on now. Yeah. People want to learn from the mistakes,
We was in Asia. We did a whole episode about this, but we was in Asia.
Right.
Me and Jamal, and we went there. We took a sabbatical for 30 days.
Okay.
And at that time, that was like when crypto was going crazy.
Okay.
And
2017?
Yep. 2017. Okay. And November 2017.
Wow. You left December 1st.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we was in, I was in Litecoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin.
Okay.
And I just put money in, and I went to Asia. And as I'm in Asia, that's when it just starts going crazy. Every day I'm making like $1,000 a day.
Right.
So I'm telling them, I'm the only one that invested out of all my friends.
Okay.
And I'm telling everybody in the group chat, I'm like, I'm sending them screenshots on Coinbase. Like, look how much money I made today. Like, it's like, I feel like I'm on top of the world. I'm like, I'll make $1 million by summer.
Right.
So
I locked it.
They still kind of like a little nervous about it. And I'm putting more money in. And it just keeps going up. So then they decided to lock in. Troy, like, locked himself in his basement. And then he started finding all these altcoins.
Okay.
And he's telling about this guy named Justin Sun, who got a coin named Tron.
Right.
I'm like, I don't even know. I stay in my lane, man. I got a nice thing with Bitcoin. You talk about all this alternative stuff.
Right. Yeah. I told him, come home. I said, yo, listen, I don't care what y'all doing. Get on the flight, come back. Right. I found something.
Okay.
But nobody was talking about altcoins at the time. It was just like Bitcoin. Everybody thought cryptocurrency was Bitcoin.
Right.
And then I saw all these altcoins. I'm like, yo, bro, this like 900 different coins.
Right.
Yeah.
So then I saw Justin Sun. I'm like, yo, I'm going to follow that.
Yeah. Right. So he said Justin Sun. And I never really trusted Justin Sun because I seen this video. Nah, it was weird.
He did a Periscope video. I promise you. We was watching him on Periscope. And he blew his nose and wiped his eyes.
Yeah, he was like,
yo, we can't trust anybody who do that.
I don't know about this guy. He's like, nah, trust me. He's a genius. Yeah. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I put some money in Tron. And then Tron goes from 2 cents to 28 cents or something like that. It was crazy.
It was like 0.4 of a cent.
Yeah, it was
going
crazy. Right. So I'm like, okay. So now it's like all money in. So now we're staying up all night.
Nobody's
looking at all these altcoins and master nodes. It became like cryptocurrency experts and making money hand over fish. And then it started to fall.
And then February came.
Right. And then it was like, all right.
Let me just hold on.
Hold on. Hold on.
Hold on. Hold on for dear life.
I'm happy we can laugh about it.
No, but then it crashed crazy.
Yeah.
But then they said buy the dip.
Right.
Oh, man. They said buy the dip. So I put more money in.
Wow.
And then it crashed again. It was like buy the dip again. Wow. And then it just, everything that I made, I lost. And then I lost more money on top of that. And
the plane is still landing.
Still haven't recovered.
But we still on the
still
plane.
Still haven't recovered.
We still on the plane.
I still got money in
you
the
holding,
crypto.
Though, right?
I'm holding.
Please.
Wait. Hold it for dear life.
H-O-D-L, right?
H-O-D-L.
Yeah, hold it. Hold it for dear life. Right. So that's the crypto. That's a good story.
Yeah, I have a much different story.
That's the thing. Like, you've been seeing the future for a long time. I read you got into Bitcoin in its early stages.
Yeah,
because it started around music when they were trying to crack down on people getting free music. They started having payments that you couldn't track, and so one of the ways you could pay was Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I ever heard about it. I never thought about it again.
Right,
but you were in there early,
2013. So I was already had a BitPay integration with my Shopify store, and it was actually Ben Horowitz, who was the first investor in Superphone, introduced me to Brian and Fred, who were the founders of Coinbase, and Brian actually gave me $5 worth of Bitcoin. And that's all I needed. I was like, okay, this is it. You know what I mean? And that was it. And so I literally, you know, that whole season, I was literally, you know, people were like, I was like, yo, I'm not performing unless I'm getting paid at Bitcoin. Like, what is that? I was like, look, just figure it out, man. But here's my wallet address. You know what I mean? Yeah, you know?
That gets tricky too.
Yeah. And so, you know, shout out my literally one of my dearest friends. You know, he really was, I would say, largely responsible for a lot of the innovation that I've come to appreciate and come to see early in technology. Rashid Richmond, and you know, he has two currencies right now, Litecash. Which he's always sending me the screenshots, you know, up 130%, up 500%. And so, you know, basically, I think that, you know, you guys did what you were supposed to do in terms of being as astute as you possibly could be in terms of being students and learning as much as possible, yeah. And also learning on, you know,
harsh lessons
on those slippery slopes on the way down, right? Yeah. And so, you know, he basically taught himself and launched a coin. And once you could build a community of miners and you can actually get listed on an exchange, there's real value. I think, though, it's important to really understand that, you know, Bitcoin is really like a stored value. And I'm just talking about Bitcoin, but really it's all cryptocurrency. Really, it's like a stored value instrument. Mm-hmm. And it being a stored value instrument, you know, it's at some point, people are actually more inclined to hold, right? Because of stored value. So it's almost like gold, right? They're holding. And, you know, there are varying viewpoints on cryptocurrency. I mean, you know, one of the greatest investors in the world is, you know, very vehemently and vocally a non-believer of crypto, Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. He's just like, look, man, what is this? You know? But at the same time, it's always just about understanding and recognizing the upside and, you know, capturing that upside before
it's over.
Before the boat capsizes. My personal opinion,
I think I believe in Bitcoin, because Bitcoin really hasn't fallen. It's like, was like 9,000 right now?
It's at 10,000.
Bitcoin never really
right now,
like, yeah. Those other coins lost like 98%, like Neo.
Yeah.
Neo.
Shout out to Neo.
Oh, I was involved in it. I had so many coins.
Yeah, we had security, just, Bitcoin Cash.
All these security coins. I became like, I'm telling you, in 3 weeks, I became a crypto.
We knew them all, man.
The security coins. I knew the privacy coins.
Dash. Monero.
Yep. Monero.
We was really in that. Over there, he know what's up.
Man, I'm telling you, man.
That was heavy. The Masternode thing, we thought we really had something.
No, the Masternode. That was...
We had like a meeting at your house, remember?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sunday.
But yeah, but Bitcoin is still kind of... I think if anything is going to survive, Bitcoin is going to be here for the future.
Yeah.
And...
Once you start seeing regulation, that's when you know, like, okay, the powers that be are recognizing the need and feel like they need to get involved. Then you know that there's enough of a mass adoption that there is some real tangible value there. And so, yeah, I mean, I've you know, getting it at like 200 a coin at Bitcoin, you know. So even to actually ride through that, you know, the height of 2017, I'm looking in my account like...
Felt like you was selling heroin. Felt like you was selling heroin. That's how I was feeling.
Yeah, like, yo, we're going to stop all this music.
Nah, it felt like it was a whole different game being played out there, man.
Yeah, we've seen people.
But what comes up must come down.
Yeah.
Speaking of the financial topic, you have Wealth Plan, right?
Right.
So what is that? What encouraged you to get into the financial literacy space as far as that's concerned?
Yeah. I'm charged up about this concept that by 2040, the majority of the United States population will be minorities, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there's only, I think the last statistic, really about 3% of us that are in technology and innovation as a career. Mm-hmm. And that's that could be for a variety of reasons. Maybe we just like singing and dancing and rapping, and you know, or maybe we just like athletics, and there's plenty of money to be made there.
Exposure.
So the issue, though, for me is that, at least, you know, in terms of some of the conversations I've been having, especially for minorities, it always seems as though we're one step behind in terms of our adoption of where the world is going. So, yeah, you know, everyone started out as farmers, then moved on to industrial, and we were still farmers, right? Mm-hmm. Then industrial moved on to service and hospitality, and we were still working on the railroad, right? And then service moved on to technology, and we're still in the service business. And when I talk about service, look around. Who's cleaning the houses? Who's cleaning the office buildings? Who's doing the, you know, services, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas there has already been a shift to technology, and even in venture investing, you know, shout out my guy, Richard Kirby from Equal Ventures. He just, you know, raised a $56 million fund. Shout out my guys over at Harvard, at Harlem Capital.
We had him on the podcast.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, my guys over there, Base Ventures, Paul Judge, you know, they're, you know, Robert Smith, I think, you know, a really big force in terms of finance and investing, private equity, right? Yep. And so I feel like there should be more names. I feel like there should be more superstars in that world and in that pathway, in that archetype, just because I feel like, A, like you said, it's about exposure. What example does the next generation really have in terms of that pathway? And also, how do we frame wealth, right? Is wealth $1 million? Is wealth $2 million? Is it $500 million? Is it $1 billion? Is it, you know, we got folks talking about Elon Musk gonna be a trillionaire, you know, Apple's got $1 trillion worth of cash or market valuation, you know. So I think that it's just important. I've had too many conversations with folks that either come into my organization that are either mentees of mine, employees of mine, who literally will tell me straight to my face, hey, I don't even look at my accounts because I don't like what I see. You don't look at your accounts? No, I don't even look at my accounts because I don't like what I see. And I'm hoping that I get the big break. You know, I'm hoping that as a creative, you know, I get the big campaign, or I get the big record deal, or I get the big athletics contract. And the reality, though, is that with calculated, measured moves, you really can, with the right kind of saving and budgeting and paying yourself and making sure that your assets are allocated the right way, you can guarantee, as long as you start early, that you retire with $1 million, right? And so for me, you know, I didn't go to school. I don't have a, you know, any series at all. I just have my experience. And so I thought that it could be valuable to give people an insight into my actual portfolio. How am I invested in real estate without having $50,000 there? How am I invested in stocks without knowing or being an expert in stocks? How am I investing in alternative investments like art or interest-bearing investments like loans that are going to give me returns? And really, you know, how do I adopt those seven streams of income? Or how did I adopt the seven streams of income of every millionaire before I'm a millionaire, right? So that those streams would actually grow and collectively would eventually yield me that $1 million or $1 million+ nest egg that I wanted to get to. And so for me, I'm looking at the next generation. I'm seeing folks in their 20s and 30s, they're getting their first jobs. Yeah, they have an appetite to, you know, buy things that they don't need to impress people that they don't know, right? And for me, I'm like, look, put that money to work for you now, and the earlier you put that to work for you, the earlier you will be able to make decisions about where you want to work in exchange for your money, because your money is working for you. And so that's really what Wealth Plan is about. It's really easy. wealthplan.co. you could just jump on, you leave your number. I will literally every month text you an action item. How do you get into stocks? How do you fix your credit? How do you loan money to yourself so that you can actually improve your credit score? Because now, of course, you're not going to default on yourself, right? And so, look, I feel like there's I went to an Ivy League school.
Harvard.
And yeah, and I mean, there were zero classes on budgeting, mm-hmm. zero classes on credit, zero classes on real estate investing, zero classes on how to even read a chart of a security, zero classes on dividends, zero classes on, and I know people, you know, with large lump sums of money in their account who literally are, because of just that lack of education, they're not even diversified in their investments. They just like to see the cash sitting in there
in a bank account
without understanding that you're actually losing money by just having, unless your interest rate in your bank account is beating inflation, you're losing money. So, and these are all just simple concepts. I break it down super simple in the same way that I'm just talking here. And it's just the ability to lay out the it's the ability that I have to lay out with clarity exactly what I'm doing so that people can make an informed decision whether they would like to mirror those exact same financial moves. And that's the kind of transparency I deliver in Wealth Plan. So it's not, this isn't a class. It's just, hey, this is where I'm invested. The barriers to entry, you know, no matter what I've seen, you know, millions of dollars flowing in and out of my accounts, you could start with $500. And, you know, it comes down to discipline. It comes down to management of your finances. It comes down to actually looking at your accounts every day. It comes down to having a goal for where you'd like to be. And just like we talked about in a previous segment, dream as big as you want to dream, right? Because once that vision is, you know, I had one conversation with the legend Quincy Jones. I said, hey, what advice do you have for me? He said, hey, shoot for the moon, you land in the stars, you know? And so, you know, what is that financial goal that you have for yourself? What is that amount that you would like to leave for your next generation? I think in many ways, especially in our community, we're worried about being check to check because mm-hmm. we got to pay that rent. We got to pay, you know, we started a business. We got to, maybe you got some employees, et cetera. And do you really want to be in that hamster wheel, right? Or do you want to be able to say, look, the same way I saw at Harvard, those kids got set up by their parents. I want to be in that position for my next generation, whether it's your nephews, your nieces, your kids, or whether you want to, you know, pay back your parents for supporting you for 18, you know, 20, 25, sometimes 30 years of your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What is it that you really want to do? And that pathway, as long as you have patience, as long as you have the ability to delay some gratification, as long as you have the ability to have some discipline with your spending and with your consumption, you could be paying yourself. And paying yourself really will pay off, you know, exponentially with compounding, you know. And so I feel like
expeditiously. I mean,
sure.
Then you have your time. I think I was having this debate, actually a discussion with a lot of my colleagues about time and like how valuable it is. And then I literally played them the quote that you said. You said that wealth, not in the sense of being a monetary thing, but wealth is having the ability to make decisions. To have your own time.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'm like, that's what I've been trying to say to y'all. That's it right there, y'all.
It's real. It's real. And so, look, I want everybody to have the time because we need more innovators. We need more creators. We need folks that are really, that are dreamers and visionaries that are going to think about these challenges that we're going to be facing because, as you've seen, with Uber, as you've seen with Airbnb, as you've seen with Dropbox, as you've seen with Google, Amazon, Facebook, Skype, WhatsApp, Brex, Robinhood, whatever it is, the folks that sit down and dream up that solution because they know the challenges that we're about to face and make it easily accessible, affordable, adoptable, those are the folks that stand to reap the benefits of creating that kind of value in the world. And so you need time to be able to just be a visionary. Mm-hmm. You need time to be able to just think. You need time to be able to just say, okay, how can I be more efficient? You need time to have dinners and conversations and take walks with people that are going to invest not only their money, but their time with you to help build that vision and make it happen. And so I'm a living breathing example of everything that I'm talking about. And I'm also not just looking for wealth plan subscribers. I'm looking for people that want to join this movement, or you want to come and work on this team and make this kind of impact, so that we have the kind of manpower that's necessary to power the foundational systemic change that's going to be necessary to put us in that position. This is the first time, I think, and you know, we were talking about agrarian to industrial. This is the first time where you could just have an idea, no brick, no mortar, mm-hmm. no wood, no steel, and build a company. Everyone talks about iPhone. It. I've seen the memes. Like, Airbnb is the biggest hotel company. They don't have any hotels. Yeah. Airbnb is Uber's the biggest travel company. They don't have any cars or trains, right? So it's about allowing yourself the opportunity, A, to be surrounded by folks that are going to inspire you and push you. They're not just going to let you dream here. They're going to push you mm-hmm. to dream as big as you possibly can dream. And also, they're not just going to push you. They're actually going to put their hands to the grindstone and grind that wheel with you. And so that's what I'm looking for as well. Y'all know how to reach me. It's textryan.com. You want specific wealth plan, it's mm-hmm. wealthplan.co. And man, I'm available. I'm checking my phone. I'm well organized. Yeah, I'm gonna make sure I get back to everybody. And we here.
That ties right into the last thing I was thinking of, and that was the importance of your circle of five theory.
Yeah.
And that pretty much is like going back to the super phone, right?
Yeah.
You can compartmentalize the people that are texting you.
Yeah.
Right. So like, if I want to talk to just my family, I could talk to them.
Right.
If I want to talk to investors, I could just talk to them.
Right.
If I want to talk to my friends in entertainment, I could just talk to them.
Right.
But that circle of five, like, you're going to find five people in there
right.
that can get you to where you need to go.
Right, right, right. And that, you know, I actually have a masterclass on this. It's called the 30 Calls Masterclass. So you can also go to 30calls.com. And basically what it allows you to do is just say, hey, how are you really spending your time? Do you really feel like you're stuck? And I advocate that whenever you feel like you're stuck, you're just one conversation away from all the change that you need to see in your life. One conversation away. In order to get that to that conversation, though, you have to have intent. And so the 30 Calls Masterclass at 30calls.com will literally just walk you through what my process is. How did I go from having no investors in my phone to raising $5.6 million for Superphone? How did I go from having no fans in my phone to doing a $2 million album cycle? Making those phone calls is exactly what changed my feeling of being, I feel like I'm stuck, to someone saying like, oh, I have this introduction for you. I have this opportunity for you. I'm top of mind when they have opportunities, or I'm top of mind when they have introductions, or I'm top of mind when they need help and I can introduce them to people. So I lay that entire process that I followed out at 30calls.com. So, I mean, listen, my whole life is everything that I'm talking about. It's scalable. It's automated the way that it needs to be, so that it allows me the time to interact on a personal level with the folks that matter most and need it the most. And so, you know, whether it's 30calls.com, it's wealthplan.co, it's textryan.com, all of them lead directly to my text message feed. It's all connected to Superphone. And whatever I can do, anyone who's listening to this podcast can do in half the time, a quarter of the time, a tenth of the time, as long as they apply that vision and ingenuity and apply that relationship management and relationship building to any goal that they wish to achieve. And so I'm here to help. I'm here to advocate. I invest. I make introductions. I coach. I mentor. I'm here to help, man. And
We're going to hold him to it.
Yeah.
Ryan, man, it was a pleasure. Like I said, it was a long time coming, but I'm glad we got a chance to do this.
Yeah, man.
Definitely did not disappoint.
Absolutely.
I know the audience is going to take a lot of gems from this. Any information you want to give the people? You gave them already, but social media handle.
Yeah. I mean, you can text me. I'll send you my Instagram.
Text him. Yeah. Ryan, what is it?
TextRyan.com.
TextRyan.com.
He ain't going to give you his phone number. That's the number, y'all.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, who's going to remember a 10-digit phone number? TextRyan.com. It's easy to remember. You leave your number. I'm sure you know that. And I'll text you right back.
Yeah, at the click of a button, 122,000 people will know what you want to say.
Yep.
Very different from Instagram where you could have 360,000 and like 15 people will find out what you have to say.
Yeah.
He's killing it, man. Listen,
Troy, housekeeping items?
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. That's our Proud to Pay program. As we kind of spoke about, we got that from Nip. So RB to Nip and the whole Marathon team, All Money In team. You know, we have new tiers there. We got more content for y'all. We're actually giving out some merch this time around. So be on the lookout for quarterly merch from us on Patreon. And everybody that is in the top tier.
Transcribed episodes, too.
You know what? I forgot. Shout out to Shamita. She actually is transcribing episodes for us. A lot of times people listen to us in cars and in trucks, and they can't take notes. They want to take notes. Like, I'm sure when they hear this episode, they're like, yo, I wanted to write that down. So what we're doing now is transcribing it for people so that they don't have to. They can actually go read the episodes when they have the time to do it. So shout out to Shamita. She's actually part of the Brand Resumes team, too.
Okay.
So she's doing double duty. So shout out to her. And shout out to everybody that is supporting us on Earn Your Leisure University. That is our, you know, our online school where we do weekly webinars, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Obviously, EYL Espanol is about to be rolled out, so be on the lookout for that. And everybody that's supporting the merch, man. Shout out to everybody that is bought our Assets Over Liabilities hoodie and continue to support that.
Yeah, we got to get you some merch. We got to get you some merch. We ran out, but we got to get you some. We ain't forget about you.
Likely story.
I'm going to shoot you the text.
Yeah.
Philly, don't forget, March 14th, March 15th, we coming. We bringing all of our friends. It's going to be crazy. If you saw the video from Atlanta, you know how crazy it's going to be. So looking forward to touching the town. And shout out to Brand Resumes also. That's our partnership that we've created with our first collaboration from a guest that we had on the podcast with Brandon. And the book tip of this week is The Intelligent Investor. That's Warren Buffett's one of his favorite books I've seen that he recommended. So, yes, thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.